B-Pod Studios.
Now, sports talk while you're on the clock. This is Zolak and Bertrand.
I'm going to slap you because you fake it.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
We do have a correction, Beetle.
Go ahead.
We want to make sure you get this so right, because everybody's hanging on pins and needles.
The Phish concerts are July 5th and 6th. The Red Sox tribute night to the band Phish is actually June 24th. So, everybody plan accordingly.
I know you're feverishly looking online for those tickets. You just want to get confused with the dates.
I don't think that's the first time they've had a Phish tribute night, though.
No. They did a Pearl Jam tribute night last year, like months before the Pearl Jam
concert.
They've
had Grateful Dead tribute nights. I think they've done a Phish one, too. I'm not positive.
Well, they're very deserving, the band. So
they're promoting it as first ever.
Oh, it is. Okay, so it is my mistake. Sorry.
Thanks, Jim.
First ever. One night only? Or
June 24th is a tribute.
One night only.
And then two nights for the band, July 5th and 6th.
Imagine that. They need two nights at Fenway.
What better way to...
Can't just do one night.
In the hot sun, July.
What better way to spend 4th of July week?
It won't smell in there at all.
It's such a horrible place for a concert.
See,
it's such a horrible concert.
It's such a horrible venue.
I've seen...
And I still go there and see things, and every time I go, I say the same thing. This place sucks.
It's gotten better each time I've been there in terms of sound. Like, every time I go, it seems like they figure something out sound-wise. But I'm just thinking the actual Phish concert and the people in attendance, as Zoe brought up, in July. It could be awfully rough.
A lot of people bang out that week, you know. Kids, what are you gonna do? Let's go to Fenway and see Phish.
Very ripe in there.
Yeah.
Yep.
Let's go watch people on acid dance in the streets.
Yeah. The Boston Globe has withdrawn their request to intervene and push for the Robert Kraft video to be released in Florida. They have withdrawn their motion, which they filed in the case. They have put out a statement today explaining why. They write, when the Globe joined the motion, authorities were explicit in describing the case as part of a human trafficking investigation. Though the Globe had no intentions to air videos of a sexual nature, we believed it important to push for public access to evidence that under Florida law should be placed in the public realm. Authorities have now said the charges against Robert Kraft are not part of a human trafficking case. While we still have an interest in video from outside the spa, we've decided to focus our energy on the famously weak public record laws of Massachusetts. In fact, earlier this week, we argued before the Supreme Judicial Court for the release of thousands of records stemming from secretive court hearings that are shamefully shielded from public view. That is what the Globe said today. What is your response, Scott Zolak?
Good for you. Because I thought, you know, you're trying to just get out there and embarrass this man. And now if this is really truly what you want to get after, which is sexual trafficking, and, you know, the problems that you actually have here in your own state, instead of just going on this piggybacked witch hunt down there. It's not a witch hunt. We know what he did. I don't think anybody approves of what took place. But it seems like they were jumping on everybody else's back after the fact. Like BZ was 6 days ahead of it. On CBS News, and they were just jumping on just because, oh, how we miss this one? Everybody else's. They want the truth. Let's get the truth. So, I mean, then you find out, wow, there was only ranch dressing and a water in that fridge. It's not human trafficking. We have bigger fish to fry here, and let's do that. Good job by them. Good job.
Do you know what I would say?
What? If you're in, you're in.
If you're in, why are you out?
Yeah, because... Maybe you found out that it's not that big a deal.
Like, if you were in on this, you were in.
Florida was wrong.
You were in not because of the human trafficking element. I think you're not being...
Sheriff Jimmy
you're
Bob.
Not. You're not being honest if you're saying that's the reason why you're in on this case and why you were reporting on this case. You were reporting on this case because of the high-profile nature of the people who were involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why. You were reporting on it because Robert Kraft is involved.
Whether it was a Globe thing, whether it was a Red Sox, you know, Patriot thing, whatever angle, right? People believe that angle. Hey, you went to the White House yesterday. Maybe you said, leave my friend alone. Withdraw all your investigations. Who knows what happened? But Yeah, to your point, it's kind of weird. In or out? Snip, snap, snip, snap. We're in. Oh, it's not what we thought it was. We're going to pull out. Yeah. Mm.
But I thought the whole thing about the human trafficking, that's been going on for a while. Like, it was decided a long time ago that there wasn't human trafficking involved with this. So why just now are they saying, authorities are saying that human, that craft is not...
That's a good question. This is two and a half weeks ago. Yeah, we found no evidence. Right? Prosecutors.
I always thought...
No, you know how it is. You got to do it all through your lawyer, and your lawyer has to get around to filing. And okay. Stuff takes right. time. So I'm not going to...
But I always thought it was more about a matter of precedent in terms of you don't want anything to be kept under wraps. You don't want anything to be hidden.
Yes.
You want the evidence to be out there.
And just because you're rich and wealthy, the rich and wealthy don't get special rules. That was sort of the premise of it.
And just
right?
because it may embarrass somebody who is who you know and don't have any desire to embarrass, you have to be consistent. And if they're going to try and keep evidence hidden that shouldn't be hidden, then you file a motion to get it unsealed or uncovered or put out there, whatever. That part of it still seems like it's on the table.
It's still a criminal case. It still is. It's still a criminal case that's going on with high-profile individuals, and the highest-profile individual being Robert Kraft. That's why I look at it and say, well, why are you bailing on this now? That was the reason why you were in the beginning? I don't know that I totally believe that.
Human trafficking investigation.
I don't know that I believe that. I'm suspicious.
I'm suspicious of that, too, because, I mean, someone told us, not speaking on behalf of the newspaper, but who is affiliated with the newspaper, that it was more of a precedent thing. It wasn't about a human trafficking investigation. No, it's just like, you know, it was a bad precedent to set. They can paper of record
for the city of Boston.
Right.
That you, in these situations, when you're covering any major story of, you know, high profile major individuals in town, you don't want a precedent being set that because of their status or their money and wealth that they get things in court that get to be hidden.
Right. In this state or any other state.
Doesn't get to get hidden.
Right. I didn't know the Globe was doing a human trafficking investigation in Florida.
Aha.
Apparently that's what they claim that it was only about. Mm. That's the only way they would have any interest in any criminal cases in Florida. So what they're saying is the only way that they would have interest in a criminal case in Florida with high-profile individuals is if it reaches the level of human trafficking. Other crimes in Florida with high-profile individuals? Not interested. Human trafficking? Yes, they'd be interested in those videos.
Well, we still have an interest in video from outside the spa. We've decided to focus our energy on the famously weak public records laws of Massachusetts.
What are the videos outside the spa that they are looking for, though, may I ask?
Hey!
What are those videos? So why do they still want those videos, may I ask? And what are those videos going to give them?
Good question.
That I don't understand.
I don't know either.
Maybe the circle of friends that he's running. I don't know.
They want the Touchdown Jesus video outside.
Hey, let's go get a sandwich.
Hey! 1 o'clock special. It's only 12:45.
Did you get the table, Sharon?
I don't get it, man. I just don't get it.
I don't.
As far as we know, nobody else has backed out at this point.
Right.
No, they say they did it on their own and not in conjunction with any other news outlet.
Well, meanwhile, there's just more and more reports that are out there in recent days that just go along the lines of things don't look good in the case for the prosecution, including the officer, one of the officers in the case who basically is saying or is heard, says the officer asked on his radio, I'm trying to read this here.
So not the officer that viewed the tape?
They insinuate that they're going to come up with something to justify the stop, the traffic stop.
No, you can't do that now after the fact. You had to come up with something there at that moment. You just can't say, what are the things we can do? He's like, pull them over 4 months ago. We could do A, B, C. No, pretty much had to have it then. It's the problem when you get these type of lawyers in and they run circles around you. I haven't heard from Sheriff Jimmy McSpitton or Jim Bob. He hasn't spoken in a while. He was adamant. We got him. We got sex trafficking here. It's there. I know it's there. They don't have that.
Well, they haven't been able to prove it.
Yep.
That's for sure. The charges, they could, the charge, I think the most damning thing against that sheriff is that they charged that other individual a couple of weeks ago. And you don't typically charge a victim of trafficking. They charge the other individual. So I would say that's the most damning thing against that claim. Let's get to Sean Grandy, voice of the Celtics. He will join us coming up next. We will recap the ending of the season with
him.
This
should be good.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Experience.
Without Zolak and Bertrand, your workday is just pushing papers and eating lunch.
What's up?
With Zolak and Bertrand, it's pushing papers, eating lunch, and talking sports.
Yeah, whatever.
Way better. Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
The questions can begin. Terry Rozier will dribble out the clock. It will hit triple zeros. And after 4 years of overachievement, 4 years of going farther than they should have, 4 years of tantalizing their fans about what was possible, a market correction in 2019 for the Boston Celtics, and a season uncomfortable from the start, ends with a whimper tonight in Milwaukee. The final score, Milwaukee 116, Boston 91. The Bucks are on to the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time in 18 years, and the Celtics, a major player, enter what is going to be one of the most fascinating off-seasons in NBA history. We go to the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline and welcome in Sean Grandy, voice of the Celtics. After one of the more disappointing seasons in the history of the franchise. Hi, Sean. How are you?
Sometimes I think if I just gone on a little longer at the end of the game with that call, we wouldn't have anything left to talk about. I just covered everything and then just kind of put a cap on. Yeah, it was. I think yesterday's last 48 hours have been like exit interviews for all of us, too, that went through this last season.
You know, I remember being out in Denver AFC Championship calling that game, and it doesn't end well, and the season's over, and it's tough, and it sucks. It hits you like a brick wall when the season's over, and I know it does for you.
But I think it's different. But at least it's different depending on what the expectations were.
Right, and I knew that, you know, we're going to be back in this thing. We'll be back in the mix next year. You guys don't know that. Like, there's a chance reset button can be pressed, and does that scare you?
Well, I think it's certainly fascinating. This is, again, one of the biggest roulette wheel off seasons. It truly is just insane to think what could happen. And even the ramp up to it, now that we're, I was thinking about the moment when Kyrie and Kevin Durant were talking in Charlotte, right? On standing on the wall and somebody got it on video for 10 seconds of them having a conversation. What did that become? It's going to be 2 months of that.
Right.
Leading up to July 1st, before the NBA, you know, I've said this a lot the last 48 hours, but I don't know what the pennant races will look like in July. I don't know what stories will come out of the opening days of NFL training camps, but the NBA is going to own July the way it never has before.
So what are you hearing, what do you gather from the team in terms of their view of how things will go with Kyrie? You know, no one can know for sure what Kyrie is thinking, but do you think the team is optimistic? Do you think they are nervous? You know, what do you think the emotional side of that is for the team?
I think the biggest difference, Beetle, is that from the start of the year to the middle of the year to now, that none of us could have projected 6 months ago, a Celtics fan's biggest fear, right, was that Kyrie was going to leave. And if you ask Celtics fans today, and this is why you don't make decisions 12, 24, 36 hours after the season ends, there is a stunningly large sentiment of let him go. And that does not necessarily make the most business sense on a variety of levels. It's just, I don't think anybody could have imagined when the narrative was, if this doesn't go well, Kyrie might leave. The notion was never that Kyrie would be a significant part of the reason it didn't go well. That wasn't really part of anybody's thinking as they projected forward. And I think right now, today, there's a lot of damage in the relationship. And I think if you give it time and a little perspective and have a bigger understanding of the bigger picture and what it means for him to just walk away versus re-sign, I think time doesn't necessarily heal all wounds, but it's going to help a little bit. And I think the feeling about it is going to be different in a few weeks than it is right now.
When it was all said and done, did you go up to Terry Rozier and shake his hand and thank him for all the sacrifices that he made and all the BS he had to put up with?
It is the Terry Rozier year is almost a perfect example in a year in which, listen, it was Kyrie this, Kyrie that. Everything was Kyrie, which is both the blessing and the curse and what he wanted, right? This is what he decided that he wanted when he left Cleveland. He wanted to be the guy. But there were plenty of little fractures and individual things that happened that had nothing to do with Kyrie, or at least it was a trickle-down. And the Terry Rozier year was one because some of what he was saying was accurate, right? He did have to sacrifice. He probably had the biggest sacrifice, but again, you don't really say that. And again, I tend to give heat of the moment, end of the last game, talking to the media stuff, some, all right, just like let it go and everybody chill out. But it was a rough year. He did have to change his role and did have to sacrifice and didn't get his contract and all that. On the other hand, he did not have a good year. And, you know, certainly offensively. So it's one of those things where I think the Terry Rozier year is emblematic of how this thing was kind of doomed in a lot of ways at the start, in ways that we see so clearly now that I don't think any of us wanted to see in October.
But he didn't change his role from what it was during the regular season last
Correct.
Year. I mean, that was his role last regular season.
He think he should have played over
his
Kyrie?
His role only changed because of an injury. And it's just, it's remarkable that guy fails to see that and that no one else, you know, can sort of explain that to him.
And one thing I would say about Terry during the year is that we live in an age where I think the old school thought is, well, and even now you get a lot of people who even you would think are being the know, say all his dollars are going to be affected, his free agent value. I think that's sort of an old school mentality. I think by having a bad year, his dollars get affected. I don't think the minutes do anymore. I think people know who the guys are that can play, and he showed what he can do on a big stage. And I think if he had had a good year in his smaller role, I think his free agent dollars wouldn't have been affected. But when you're a human being, remember what a big deal it was to get Marcus Smart signed, which there was some pessimism about last summer.
Right.
And did not have that be an issue. You know, you're watching Terry Rozier and say, you know, Terry, play your role. We had this conversation, I believe, at the start of the year, in that the role players on a team like Golden State, you're talking about Andre, and I don't like the term role players, but you know what I mean. The fifth guy, sixth, seventh guy, the guys you need on a championship team, those are glue guys. There are two different places to be in the NBA. When you're young and in your first couple of years, you haven't made your money yet, you're trying to find your place in the league, show everybody you can play and establish yourself and get that big contract. It's human nature. And then there's guys on the other side of that. In Golden State, there's Andre Iguodala. There's Sean Livingston. There's veteran players in those spots. The Celtics were trying to do this with a lot of young guys who haven't reached that point yet, and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier. And there's human nature when you've had that big year and everyone tells you how great you are and you're headed for that first big contract. It is difficult when you're in your second and third year, whatever, to take that step back. And we can sit here and say, well, he should have just gone back to his role and play. And of course, that's what you would have liked to have had. But I think that human nature part of the way this team was constructed, advertently or inadvertently, also kind of got overlooked.
Which of the young players in your mind took a step forward this year?
Well, I think at the top of that list is the second half that Jaylen Brown had was very, very good. And it's hard. You think, you know, there were things that did go well this year. This team won 49 games. They were the sixth best team in the league, and I find it amazing that there were people that have sort of expressed surprise as to how the series went in the big picture, when you realize, well, they'll turn it on in the playoffs. You know what? occasionally that can happen. It almost never does. And the regular season is such a better indicator of what's going to happen in the playoffs than people want to say that it is. The top eight teams in the NBA basically all year were the top eight teams remaining. The Bucks were who they were all year during the playoff series, and so with the Celtics. They were the best. The Celtics were the fifth or sixth best team in the NBA this year, and that's exactly how it ended. And the Bucks are the best team in the league, and they're the first ones that go to the conference finals. All of that makes sense. Within that context, you know, Jaylen Brown, I thought as the team struggled early in the year, he was struggling to find his role, and he broke out of that and found his place and really became a dangerous player. And arguably, Al Horford's in that conversation too, was the Celtics' best player, most consistent player in the playoffs. I think that was certainly a bright side.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting how you bring up, you know, those role players, and Morris is like one of those guys too, you know, where he wants to come back, likes playing here. And then you hear Gordon Hayward, who wasn't available after the last two games, talk about, you know, I'm excited to get into an offseason where I'm healthy and I can just worry about playing basketball. Does that timing of his whole sort of a rehab type year, and it was like a throwaway year for him to get his confidence back? I know he played better at the end. Another sort of a chink in the armor there, because his timing wasn't right with the other team's timing.
It was the worst case scenario for that injury, and we talk about the Paul George injury a lot as the closest comparison. Paul George's injury happened in the summer, and it allowed him to come back the following season and play 15, 20 games in a meaningless situation. The Pacers were out of the playoff race, and then he sort of came back and was able to start ahead in that next year of where Gordon Hayward was, certainly at the start of this year. And it's really interesting to me, if you look at this year, Gordon Hayward was probably the biggest bellwether for this team. When he was good, the Celtics were really difficult to beat. And obviously he was better towards the end of the year and was really good in, you know, in April and in that playoff series. And when he struggled and, you know, they did not have any success against Milwaukee, it was a tough team for him to score against. But again, that's another positive. People talk about, oh, the contract, Gordon Hayward's not, you know, he's not tradable, you can't move on. Well, the Celtics at the trade deadline, people say, why didn't they make a move? They had a chance to make the biggest move of all, the biggest addition, and that's add a healthy Gordon Hayward. And they did, and you saw what it could be. You got a lot of glimpses of what Gordon Hayward can be. And it's not a – you're talking about starting over again. What's the worst-case scenario? If Kyrie walks and you have Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and Gordon Hayward, and who knows what's going to happen with the draft lottery and other things – I'm not sure it could be completely different next year, but what's the worst case scenario? How low could the floor possibly fall when you have still so many more assets than a lot of teams do?
Does Al Horford opt out and sign a new deal, or does he just play out the last year of what he's got?
I think it depends on the other thing. I think that is a domino that is the fourth or fifth. And talking about the Celtics offseason without knowing what Kyrie is going to do is really a fool's errand, and trying to get into Kyrie's head is the biggest fool's errand of all, because there's no way to know from day to day what he's going to do or what he's – you don't know what he's thinking on a Wednesday, let alone July 1st, which is still, you know, 7 weeks away.
Thinking on a Wednesday? He gets confused sometimes, I think.
I think that what we know now that we've had – a real year of Kyrie under the spotlight. And it's been a week of Kyrie bashing. And I would say all of it has been deserved. But what we do know, I think there was unfairness about this. We expected Kyrie, you know what Kyrie was this year? He was Kyrie. That's who this dude is. He is a different breed of cat. There is no question about it. I think, again, it was unfair of us to expect him to change, and all the things we sort of knew and heard about him in Cleveland, for him to suddenly be a different guy. He's not. He's different. And so that is a blessing and a curse. He's extraordinarily gifted on the floor, obviously. He's still – I brought this point up the other day, and I'm not saying everything is going to magically work out and he's going to turn around and say, you know what, my bad, let's do this thing. I'm coming back. I want my number in the rafters. And by the way, if that happens, almost all of you that say, get him out of here in this Kyrie thing, everybody will go crazy and buy in again, because – that's how strong the belief is in this team among fans. But I think we unfairly expected him to be something different from what he is. And this is the thing I was bringing up about his age. I don't know if everything will magically change. But Paul Pierce, in this town and in the league and nationally. His reputation was not good when he was a younger player. He had a bad run in the World Championships in 2002 with George Karl. Everybody here remembers in 2005 when he basically had a fit during that Pacers playoff series, and he got kicked out of Game 6, and he did the press conference with the Jacob Marley Ebenezer Scrooge thing wrapped over his head, and there was this really high level of immaturity. Paul Pierce was older during that series against the Pacers than Kyrie is now. And so when you're talking about, I think one of the things that him trying to so hard, earnestly, to be a leader this year, he's 26 years old. He's not that much older than, you know, some of these guys on a younger team, health-wise and whatever. He still could be have the second half of his career.
He'll grow into it. He'll grow into it is what he'll do.
Sign him back. I like that.
Sign him back. He'll grow into it.
You made us feel better.
You know what? I guess that's my job. Remember what I always say? When you're losing, it feels like you'll never win again. And when you're winning, it feels like you'll never lose again. So, obviously, at a rock-bottom kind of moment, at a terrible feel, you know, you say, let's give this. Remember that you played that thing about Milwaukee, what I said, like 2 months earlier? All that has to do with is knowing that things tend to change and give it a little time to decompress. And, of course, everybody, that's a natural emotion. You're supposed to say today, oh, this is terrible, and it was an ugly year, but it's over, and it's not likely to happen again.
Okay, Sean.
Thanks, Sean. We appreciate it. Thanks all year.
You got it, guys.
All right, buddy.
Sean Grandy on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Hardy has headlines. We'll get back to your calls on the Bruins, the Celtics, Patriots, everything from the week. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Zolak and Bertrand continues on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
That's bullshit. I mean, now one of us on this team knows what Kyrie's been through. Probably a few amount of people in this world know what Kyrie goes through. You know, it was hard for him as well. You know, he was forced into a situation where it was business over, you know, the friendships, where he had to come into a situation knowing that, you know, this is a group of guys that had something going before, you know, I come here.
All right, we're still taking your Celtics anger a couple of days later.
Hi. Angry Seas fans.
617-779-0985. Chris in Hartford on Marcus Smart. Take it away, Chris.
You got it, Beatle. Good morning, Zoe.
Good morning.
Hey, listen, Marcus Smart, I love him in the green, okay? I love him in the green. Marcus, if you're listening, do not look at the basket. Your job is to play defense for the Boston Celtics. They are going to rotate and want you to get the ball, so you shoot the ball. That's what the other team's going to say. Just because you're open doesn't mean you shoot the rock. Do not look at the basket next year. Your job, you sign $50 million contract to play defense. Give the ball to Tatum or Brown. Beetle, you know what I'm talking about. Fellas, have a great day.
He shoots too much. Yes. Yes. Do we have an update on our stat, Jim? We had a great Marcus Smart shooting statistic that Jim was able to offer us up. That was probably about a month ago.
It's like the Jackie Bradley hitting statistic.
How he was one of the worst shooters in the modern era of basketball.
Yeah.
It was so good.
It was like that Jackie Bradley thing.
It was such a great stat.
Worst Red Sox hitter in the history of the Red Sox.
I assume it stayed flat because he got hurt.
Right.
So he never played the rest of the season.
It didn't change much.
You're right.
Let me see if I can find that. It was predicated on a few things, like number of attempts. I think it was mostly like three-pointers.
Yeah.
It was he and Rozier.
Yeah. Yeah, some of the worst shooters in the history of the game.
The Rozier,
I don't care about Rozier. I care about Smart because I like him and I want him on the team.
Right.
I don't care what happens to Rozier. He can go, you know, do that in a Denver Nuggets jersey next year, wherever the hell he goes. I don't care about him.
I have it here.
Okay, thank you.
In the last 40 years since the NBA adopted the three-point shot.
40 years in the history of three-point shots. Sure,
only two players ever to have these stats.
It's already not going well.
Field goal attempts of more than 1,800 in their career.
Okay.
With a field goal percentage of less than 38%.
Okay.
And then three-pointers, more than 850 attempts, and the percentage less than 355. So 35.5%.
Okay.
There's 461 people in 40 years that qualify for that stat.
Yeah.
The only two that have those numbers.
Yeah.
Marcus Smart, Terry Rozier. So I don't know when he got hurt, but that was February 24th.
Which is the way of, and I don't know who started this. Someone started this, and I want to give them all the credit in the world for doing it. But I would just say that this is a way of.
That's a Boston Sports Inf.
Good job, Boston Sports Inf on Twitter. Of working the stats to prove a point. You suck at shooting. You're not very good.
Jesus.
You suck at shooting. You're good at the game-winning plays and doing things that sort of ignite the team. You're great at coming up with a loose ball, and you're great at making defensive stops, and you're great at helping other guys make defensive stops. That's one of my favorite parts about him as a player, right? Is being like a help defender, if you will.
Yeah.
Like a helper.
An off-the-ball help defender.
A
yes.
helper.
Yes.
That's what I like about him. But in terms of his shooting?
No.
Oh, no. Every time he shoots, I'm like, oh, no.
It's the same
Don't
conversation we had when he signed the contract, though. We're like, is there a stipulation in there that he can only have, like, X number of shot attempts per season or per game?
Yeah.
It's going to happen again next year. He's going to shoot.
It's okay. We still love him. We still want him here. And he's Team Kyrie. So
I know.
He's one of our guys.
He's one of our guys.
We need him. He's one of our guys. He's in our camp. We need him. We want him here. He's Team Kyrie. All those good things.
Like him.
Yeah, he's one of our guys. He's one of our guys, unfortunately.
Oh, boy.
Just shoot a little less. And we have stopped asking Brad Stevens about his shots. Because every time we'd ask Brad if he would ever suggest shooting less, if he had ever suggested to him, hey, maybe not shoot, every time he's like, no, I tell Marcus, shoot. You got a shot, take it, baby. And it's like, all right, never mind.
Never tell players.
He actually
don't pass
played 21 games after that injury till the end of the season. After that stat came out, rather,
okay.
Until his injury.
Okay, did the percentages at all change?
Yes. He shot 47% from the field and almost 40% from three.
And what did that do to
that 21-game stretch?
What did that do to the career number?
I didn't budget.
It probably didn't budge that much.
Not enough of a sample.
But that's a pretty good stretch he had, though.
That is. That's a good stretch. You're right. John is in Brockton. Hey, John.
Hey, guys. So, I mean, a guy that can come into our locker room and bring down a demeanor because of his mood is absolutely insane and such a cancer to our locker room that we have to evaluate that. And I feel like we should pursue Kyrie, but at the same time, we got to think about, like, the mental state
all
that
right.
he's in.
Oh, wait, stop.
He's sounding like...
What do you think Danny's going to do? What has Danny always done? Does he worry about chemistry in this area, or does Danny acquire talent?
Danny acquires talent.
Yeah. Now, Danny's going to sign him. Danny's going to do everything he can do to sign him and get Anthony Davis.
If we can't get him, though, I think that there's viable options for us.
Well, that changes things.
Daniel
if you don't get Anthony
Russell
Davis,
doesn't resign,
if you don't get Anthony Davis, that changes everything, I think.
Well, we still need that point guy. I mean, like, Terry runs the four. I know he's not good at that three-point like we were talking about, but I feel like if we went after someone that's around the same age or younger than Kyrie, that has the same mentality and still runs the floor and a great locker room guy like D'Angelo Russell, I think that we could go out for that. I think that that's a better option for us. He's younger. We can sign him for longer. He's just an all-around guy for the team, I believe. I feel like he could just fit right in. I know he doesn't go for scheme like you said, but I feel like that's another guy that we should go after. Sign and trade Kyrie to New Orleans and get Anthony Davis by packaging Brown in a first round or something.
So then your team would be D'Angelo Russell and Anthony Davis?
And Gordon Hayward?
It would be D'Angelo Russell, Gordon Hayward, Jason Tatum.
Oh, so you wouldn't have Anthony Davis?
No, I Anthony Davis too.
Oh.
He wants to trade Kyrie for Anthony Davis.
Yeah, that's not the end of the world. I don't hate that. If you know you can get D'Angelo Russell.
Well, that's another caveat.
That's not terrible. Yeah. No, but I just think that's going to be really hard to pull off. But, hey, if you can do that, great.
What are we doing next?
We're giving away Bruins tickets next for game three. Game two.
Not
game
Sunday.
Three. We're giving away game two tickets. The game will be played at 3 o'clock on Sunday. We'll give away those tickets.
Oh, could you imagine giving Mom this for Mother's Day? Oh, my God.
We're giving away the tickets next.
My mother would be so excited.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Zolak and Bertrand. That's a 3-inch difference between those two guys.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Everybody, everybody.
Caller 10 right now to the Pride Motor Group contest line.
Here we go.
Contest line only. Call this number, the contest line.
Don't be stupid.
Of the Pride Motor Group variety. 617-931-0985.
Go.
We'll score a pair of tickets to see the Bruins take on the Hurricanes. Game 2, Sunday at the Garden, 3 p.m. Experience the excitement of the 2019 Boston Bruins playoffs. Get your tickets now at Ticketmaster.com/Bruins. If you're caller 10 right now on the contest line only, you will score a pair of tickets to Sunday's game. Don't forget, join the Bruins for pregame playoff fan fest happening for game two Sunday starting at 12:30 on Canal Street across from the Garden. Music, games, prizes, photo opportunities, variety of activities, admission free. You do not need a ticket to the game to go to the Fan Fest. Learn more for that at BostonBruins.com/PlayoffsFanFest. BostonBruins.com/PlayoffsFanFest happening on Canal Street starting at 12:30 on Sunday. You don't need a ticket to the game to go to the Fan Fest.
You know what bugged me last night?
What?
So after the game, you know, get excited and win and this and that. And I'm like, okay, we advance another round. It's the Eastern Conference Finals. I turn on Felger and Amonte.
How are they?
And there he is. They were good. I mean, I like them. That's what I watch post-game. But I'm only watching because I want the glass to be beaten. And there were some rumbles last night. They got a little.
Couple of taps.
To see Felger straighten up in his chair to give that quick little, just that little bit of being uncomfortable. That's what we need. And then here's your problem.
What?
Supposedly, you can't walk directly behind like you used to. You could. There's two edge windows you could look in, but where it says garden behind her, it's all fake. It's fake because they covered that up, and my phone lit up from people there. There's cops there. There's two security guards.
So I asked.
I wonder why.
Hold on. I asked this morning.
We could fix this. But like last night, I don't blame you for not getting in trouble.
Yeah.
But like. When it's the cup, you do anything for the cup.
I sent a text to someone and said, are those guys paid details or are they doing that out of the goodness of their heart? Number one. I said, I think that's an important detail to know. I said, because if they're paid details, let's not pay them for a game the next round.
Right.
What do you say? You know?
Right.
Let's live dangerously.
Or people like me may be able to obtain maybe a ticket to the game. Go down with maybe a buddy or two.
Oh, hey.
We'll go down to the street there by that.
I had a bad headache the next day.
I did cops. Game. Cops dig me, you know.
Oh, they dig you?
Hey, man, you know, I appreciate your service.
Maybe ask them to take a picture with them.
You are real heroes. Why don't you come over here? Let's go have a piece of pizza. It's a nice donut shop right down the street here.
You're gonna take them to halftime.
Some donuts.
Get some pizza at halftime while we do our business.
Beetle and Hardy got this covered, okay? I'm going to go. This one's on Zoe. Come on. My buddy owns this place down here. We'll go to Johnny's. We'll go see Johnny down at West End Johnny's.
That'll make up for the seafood tower game.
And then it's on.
They will be there, by the way. Felger and Amonte doing their thing. for game two on Sunday.
We're it's a buildup.
Post game Sunday, right after the game, flip on over to NBC Sports Boston and catch the post game.
Last round, we got nothing. We got no vibrations. Last night, there are people trying to hit the glass with the fist.
It sounded like someone just, I mean, like one or two people trying to get in.
You know what it is? Reaching over the cop going.
I mean, years ago in the now famous footage, it sounds like a mob. This sounds like just two people trying to get in. Hello?
Hey.
Hello?
You people walk around. You got your vuvuzelas or you got your selfie sticks. Yeah. Extend them. Go over top the detail to where you're pushing their whole.
There's
you
nowhere
back.
To see. There's no poke the glass, way to see, though. There's no.
You don't need to see. We just need to hear you. Just disrupt the show. Hey, NBC Sports did a little special on it. They think it's cute.
You need some sort of stick.
Felger was egging me on. Felger was calling me out a week ago.
You know what? So that's a good point. I was blaming you for this detail.
Right.
They did their special on it. That's on them.
You want it? You're going to get it. Mm. You're going to get it.
By the way, big supporter of cops already. Even bigger supporter as of this morning. Because I've had issues with.
Well, you're not a supporter
of issues this morning.
State troopers. Because they've said mean, awful things to me before at the airport.
They have?
Like, get going, Jamoke. Or, come on, I don't care if it is your mother that you're unloading. I'm like, why are the state troopers? I ran into a state trooper this morning on, where was I? Feels like 93 northbound.
Somewhere around there. Yeah. Around Split? Yeah. Somewhere around Split?
Yeah, somewhere before the Split.
You weren't going fast or anything, were you?
Maybe a little
bit.
Did
he pull you over?
Let me tell you something.
Did he pull you over?
He did.
And what'd he say?
He said... where's the fire? You know, essentially, where are you going? What's the speed limit? I said, I'm going to work. He said, what's the speed limit? I said, 55. And he said, how?
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.